Okay, so Bruchos Haba'os, and welcome to this exciting new endeavor. I want to start off by thanking Rabbi Karnofsky for organizing and doing all the behind-the-scenes work for this, so that all I had to do was prepare this year. This was obviously meant to be, because when Rabbi Karnofsky called me a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, and he told me this idea, I actually had read, written down that I thought it would be a great idea to get the alumni together for a shiur, but I didn't follow through yet. It was on my grand to-do list, but then he called me and had this idea, and he made it happen. So this is Zeha Yom Asah Hashem. This is definitely something that was meant to be. And it's so exciting to be with so many of my favorite people, Beis Yaakov Denver graduates. And I know that you're a very hush of a group. How do I know that? Because I know that I'm speaking to a group of women that have many things to do, tonight included. And the fact that you're taking time to call in or to watch this recording is a testament to you, that you want to connect more deeply to this time of year. There's a story about a bachar who was leaving Eretz Yisrael after being there for a couple of years. And he went to get a bracha from a rav as he was leaving and starting a new chapter in his life. So the rav turned to him and said, "What are you leaving with?" So he didn't quite understand the question. And he said, "El Al." And the rav said, "Again, what are you leaving with?" And he said, "Two suitcases?" Another man was there with him, and he nudges the bachar and he says, "No, he means you were here for 2 years. What are you leaving with? What did you learn? What did you take?" And that's the way that the Jewish calendar works. As we go through each stage, each month, each time period, we want to know what we can do to take the time and make it real. I heard once, and I like to repeat over, that we don't want to be like a donkey. A donkey carries wheat in the wheat season, barley in the barley season, apples in the apple season, but yet remains a donkey throughout. And I know that we're all busy trying to figure out, what are we going to serve for Shalosh Chodesh, and is it preparation to drink Gatorade on Shabbos, and does everyone have Tisha B'Av shoes? And we're very caught up in all of the wrappings and trappings of this time of year. But we're all looking to connect a little bit deeper. And it's an incredible thing, because in the past 10 years or so, I unfortunately lost both of my grandmothers. And what I find so fascinating is that although I was close with them, there were no halachic ramifications of their deaths upon me. Yet, this week, since Shivasar B'Tammuz, and definitely as we approach closer and closer to Tisha B'Av, there are halachic ramifications on each one of us of a real avel. It's real avelos. These are actual halachos that an avel observes. But yet it's a building that I never saw. It's an experience that I never had. Yet I go through motions that are just like an avel. And it's hard because we're grappling for meaning. And if you find yourself having a little bit of a hard time connecting to this time of year, it makes sense, because we're in a time period called Ikvasa de Mashiacha, the footsteps of Mashiach. And Ekev literally is a heel. The heel is a very callous part of the body, which is a good thing, because if it was a sensitive part of the body, it would hurt every time we walked. So Chachmas Hashem, that he made it callous. However, it also can be descriptive of our generation, that we have a hard time connecting to a Tisha B'Av. It is a struggle. We are going through the motions. We're having only milchigs and parv this week. We're not drinking wine. We're not going swimming, etc. But we want to connect. It's just a harder, it's a little bit hard. And that makes sense, because it is a more callous generation. Chorban is milashon charev, which means destruction, dried out. So it makes a lot of sense. But if that makes you feel bad, I'm here to tell you something that will make you feel better. There's a pasuk that perhaps you learned here in Beis Yaakov, in Parshas Bahaloscha, it says that Moshe was anav mikol adam. Moshe was the humblest of all men. What does that mean? So one medrash says that when Moshe Rabbeinu saw all of the generations that would come after him, and he saw our generation, he was humbled. Why? Because he saw people who didn't naturally connect to a Tisha B'Av, for example, or an Elul, or any time period of the year. But yet they went through, they're still following the halachos because they fear Hashem and they respect the mitzvos, and we want to follow the halachos. And he was so humbled by such people. Remember back to being a student, and remember when one of your biggest stresses was finals? I know that sometimes you think back to that and you're like, I think I have a little bit more on my plate at this stage. But can you imagine if your teacher had given you the final that she was going to be presenting to you a few days later, not just the final she gave last year or 2 years ago, but the actual final? It would be so helpful. Hashem is that kind of a teacher. And Hashem does let us know what kind of final, what questions are going to be on the final. One of the questions Hashem is going to ask us is Tzipisa LeYeshua. After 120 years, Hashem is going to ask each one of us, did you anticipate Mashiach's arrival? Did you await him? Did it bother you that you were in Galus? But again, we've become a little bit callous. Rabbi Shapiro from Miami tells a story about his father, who was also a Rav. And he says that his father was announcing a few days before Tisha B'Av what the Tisha B'Av schedule was going to be. And he got up and he said, Rabosai, on Wednesday night, if Mashiach, Chas V'Shalom, doesn't come, then Maariv will be at whatever time and Eicha will begin at whatever time. And there was a man in the Kehila who snickered and rolled his eyes and he said, yeah, like that's going to happen. Chas V'Shalom, Mashiach doesn't come. How many years have we said that? And Rabbi Shapiro stopped and he said, with all due respect, I paskin lahalacha that the individual who just snickered at what I said cannot say the animamins in the morning, specifically the one that achakelo b'chol yom shayavo, that he could come at any time. We have to believe that this galus could end at any moment. There's a story about a man in Eretz Yisrael who struggled financially very, very much. And every week he would save up a few shkalim and he would go every Friday to the bookstore and he would purchase a new sefer for Shabbos. That was his oneg Shabbos, not dips, not candy, not kishka, but a sefer. On Erev Shabbos Chazon, he came to the bookstore and he purchased a brand new kinos. And then he proceeded to argue with the proprietor about the price. And the proprietor was kind of taken aback. He says, you've been coming here for months, years, and you never gave me a problem. Why all of a sudden are you giving me a problem? And he said, see, those other svarim I'm going to use for a long time, God willing. But this sefer of kinos, I'm hoping I'm going to get very little, if any, use out of. That's the way we want to live. But it's hard because there might be a niggling thought in your mind that says, you know, I went through these halachos last year. I cried. I listened to shiurim. I tried to connect. And Mashiach didn't come. Imagine if Chalila there was an earthquake and a person was trapped in a building of in a bunch of rubble. The building had collapsed and now he has rubble all around him. And this is a mashal because we can make whatever we want happen. And so he has a hammer and he has a flashlight. So every day he comes and he chops away a little bit out of the rubble. And he uses his flashlight and he works. He doesn't know when morning and night is, but he works and he chips away and he chips away and he's tired and he sleeps and he gets up and he chips away again. And then he feels very distraught because he looks around every day and he says, I'm not getting anywhere. But is that true, ladies, girls? Is that true? Of course not. He is progressing. It might look the same all around him. However, he's progressing. And one of those times, he's going to chip away and chip away. And all of a sudden, he's going to see sunlight flooding through. And that's the way we have to view this time of year. So again, like we said before, we're living in Ikvasa de Mashiach. And I just want to read to you some quotes that will prove to you that we're in Ikvasa de Mashiach, in case you have any doubts of that. The Chafetz Chaim is noted as describing each of the millennium. The first, from year 0 to 1000, is like Sunday. From 1000 to 2000, like Monday, and so on and so forth, which puts us in 5779 in the sixth millennia, which is like Erev Shabbos. Now, I don't know how it works in your house, but in most houses, what happens is the closer you get to candle lighting time, the quicker the pace in the house goes. People are taking showers or cleaning up or preparing food very casually throughout the day. But as we get closer and closer to lichtbenching, the potatoes are getting peeled faster and the people going in and out of the bathroom showering are faster. And we find that in the times that we're living in now. Look at this, you know, how we can just connect to each other instantaneously, how long it used to take to communicate with people and now how fast things go. Everything is just getting faster. People used to travel by foot. Now, within a few hours, you could go from America to Eretz Yisrael on a plane, not for weeks in a boat. So that's one proof that we are in Ikvasa de Mashiach. I'm going to read for you a few quotes from the Gemara that describes this time and just see if any of these sound familiar. At that time, I'll say it in English, obviously, there will be rampant chutzpah. Things will be very expensive. Young people will humiliate older people. The old people will feel compelled to honor the young people. Children will rebel against parents. There will be issues with mothers-in-law. Torah and Talmidei Chachamim will be mocked. The truth will be very obscure. There will be a lack of strong leadership. Family members will become enemies. In Yirmiyahu, there's a beautiful pasuk that says that Hashem is comforting Rachel Imenu when she finds out that we're going to be going to Galus, and this is something that I'm sure you're all familiar with, and the famous pasuk of Rachel Mevaka al Baneha, and Hashem says, Rachel, in your zechus, v'shavu me'eretz oyev, that your children are going to come back. Yes, they have to go to Galus, but Rachel, in your zechus, they're going to come back. Now the question is, we're told that already. It says in the Torah, it says in Chumash Devarim, im yihia nidachacha bikzei ha-shamayim, misham yikabetzcha Hashem, elokecha misham yikachacha. We were already told in the Chumash that Hashem was going to redeem us. So what was this chiddush to Rachel Imenu? And I heard that the promise to Rachel Imenu was that not only will they return in the end, b'yimos ha-mashiach, but there will be an added benefit that the years preceding Mashiach's arrival, they will already return to Eretz Yisrael. Is that incredible? Don't we see this in our times, that Baruch Hashem, that Klal Yisrael has established itself in Eretz Yisrael, and Torah is growing, and mitzvah observance is growing there, Baruch Hashem. The last proof I wanted to share with you, there are more, there's a pasuk where Hashem tells Avram Avinu that he should go from Haran to Eretz Yisrael. And he tells Avram, Ve'e'escha l'goy gadol, I will make you into a great nation there, Va'avarchaka, and I will bless you, Va'agadla shemecha, and I will make your name great, Ve'heye bracha, and you will be a blessing. So Rashi says, Ve'e'escha l'goy gadol, I will make you into a great nation, Ze she'omri melukei Avraham. In correspondent to that, we say, Elukei Avraham, Va'avarchaka, Zesha Omi Melukei Yitzchak. For that we say Elokei Yitzchak. What we're referring to is the first bracha of Shemona Esrei. Ba'agadla Shemecha, and I will make your name great. Zesha Omi Melukei Yaakov. Yechol Yehi Chosmin B'chulan. Perhaps you would think that we should end the first bracha of Shemona Esrei. Magen Avraham Yitzchak V'Yaakov. Talmud Lomar V'Heyei Bracha V'Chachosmin V'Lo Bahem. Avraham, we're going to finish off the bracha just with you, not with them. That's what Vehaye Bracha means. However, on a deeper level, what it means is that Avraham, we're going to finish the galus with people like you. What does that mean? What is unique about Avraham Avinu? Two aspects. Number one, Avraham Avinu, we know, had the Midah of Chesed. Ladies, we're all connected from all over the world. But I'm sure that in your communities, no matter what country you live in, no matter what city you live in, there are gemachs, there's bikur cholim, there's hachnasas orchim, there's coordinating meals for new mothers. There's so much chesed going on, unprecedented levels. And that is what was predicted to happen before Yemos HaMashiach. And the second qualifier of Avraham Avinu is Yitzchak and Yaakov would be what we would term today as FFBs. They grew up in Torah homes. However, Avraham Avinu was what we would call a Baal Tshuva. He did not grow up in a Torah home. Isn't that what we see today? So many people, Baruch Hashem, coming back to Torah, even if their parents didn't have the privilege of having a Jewish education, or for whatever reason were not Torah observant. So these are all proofs, so to speak, that we are in Ikvasa de Mashiach. So for the remainder of the share, I hope to answer the following questions, and I'm going to read them off. Number one, and this is the one we're going to spend the most time on, am I really lacking anything? Do we really have, don't we have Eretz Yisrael already? So what is it that we're waiting for? How can our generation bring Mashiach if the Chafetz Chaim didn't bring Mashiach, the Vilna Gaon didn't bring Mashiach, etc.? What about all those people who did yearn for Mashiach? The Chafetz Chaim in particular, I'm thinking of, how he wrote and he studied different things. He was a Kohen, so he trained the other Kohanim in case Mashiach would come. The Kohanim should know the Halachos. Also, what about the question of we have so many Averos? Even in the Torah observant community, how is it going to be that we'll be Zocha to Mashiach's arrival? So let's start with the first question. Am I really lacking anything? Some people have coined this to be a benign galus. Baruch Hashem, we have a lot of freedom. We might struggle in different ways, but even, for example, the struggle of finances. If any of us would have pulled up to Nebuchadnezzar's palace in the most yeshivish car there is out there, I'm talking about those cars that everything is making noise except the horn. That's a yeshivish car. And you would have pulled up to Nebuchadnezzar's palace. Nebuchadnezzar himself, along with his servants, would have come out and bowed down to you. Baruch Hashem, even the majority of people, even if they struggle financially, they have access to running water and electricity and temperature. You know, they have control over the temperature of their homes. So one of the girls, the first year that I taught, gave a presentation for Yahadus class, and I can't remember what the assignment was, but I remember this mashal, and it really struck a chord. It's a very simplistic mashal, but it really clarified things for me. And she said there was once a person who was thrown into jail and he had committed some kind of crime. It wasn't terrible, but it definitely made him be incarcerated. So after a few weeks, he was getting very lonely and he went to the guard and he said, is there any way that, I know this is crazy, but is there any way my wife could join me? Like, it's so, so lonely here. And they acquiesced. They allowed because his crime wasn't so bad, and they figured if the wife agrees, kol hakavod, no problem. So so time went on, and then they realized that maybe their kids need them. So they invited the kids too, and the kids needed friends to play with. You're getting the picture. Eventually, there was an entire city, and a network of people that developed in this dungeon, and they built pizza shops and schools and farm stores, and they thought they had a great life. But they were in a dungeon. They didn't know what does it mean to have a blue sky. They didn't know what a mountain was. They didn't know what sunshine was, what fresh air was. They thought they had everything, but they really didn't. They really didn't. I once heard a mashal of a person. Let's put the mashal in the time period of the concentration camps. So there's a father and a son who are in the camps, and one spring afternoon, the father turns to the son and he says, my child, it's Erev Pesach. And I was able, Baruch Hashem, v'chaste Hashem, to smuggle in a little kazayis of matzah. I want to give this to you. And I want to tell you that many years ago, Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim after Paro enslaved us. And Mirz Hashem, he will take us out again. A good Pesach. And he gives it to his little boy. Would you call that a Pesach? Baruch Hashem. I'm sure we have all experienced beautiful Chagim, where there's zmiros, there's Dibri Torah, there's a table laden with the Seder plate and all of the most beautiful dishes that we own. That's a Pesach, isn't it? Yet, our Pesach, compared to the Pesach of the time of the Beis HaMikdash, the gap is much greater than from that story to our Pesach. So I want to share with you a little bit about some of the beautiful things that occurred during the time of the Beis HaMikdash. Sometimes I think about it, you know, before on an Erev Pesach or an Erev Shavuos or any time that there would be Aliyah L'Regel and I'm davening Shemona Esrei and we say B'li Yerushalayim, Yerchan, I just think back, like, wouldn't it be nice to celebrate all together? There wouldn't be a question of what are you doing for Sukkot? Where are you going? You would have no problem about, you know, where we're going to stay, his house, my parents' house, his parents' house. None of that. We're all going to Eretz Yisrael. We're all going to Yerushalayim. Firstly, and most simply, perhaps, is the story of Rabban Gamliel. Rabban Gamliel would say that there was a widow who lived next door to him, and she was very sad, understandably, and she would get up in the middle of the night, and she would cry because she missed her husband. And when he heard her get up to cry, Rabban Gamliel would get up, and he would say Tikkun Chatzos. So when you hear that, you just assume, well, you know, especially as women, you understand when you see somebody cry, it invokes tears in yourself. However, it was deeper than that. Rabban Gamliel understood that this widow's pain was an offshoot of Galus. She was in pain because ultimately the reason was because we were in Galus. And that's what prompted him to say Tikkun Chatzos. Anybody going through a challenge, which is basically everybody, it is rooted in the fact that we are in Galus. And people have said that perhaps we're not in a Holocaust right now, but perhaps each one of us experiences, unfortunately, personal Holocausts in their life. And I think that not only is the actual pain difficult to go through, which as we're saying is a direct link to Galus, but it's also compounded by the fact that we don't have the clarity that we would have in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. In the time of the Beis HaMikdash, a person had a question of why something was happening to them. So they would go to the Navi. I think there is a story where Shaul lost his sheep. So he went to Shmuel to go find out, you know, how, why, where are they, etc. There was a clarity. So when we daven Hashiva Shavteinu Kibarishona, Hashem, please return our judges as they used to be. That's something we definitely can connect to. I'm sure that each one of you, unfortunately, has gone through things and you're just feeling confused and you would love some clarity. You would love to know why is this happening? What's going to be the outcome? And what does Hashem want me to do? Well, if there was a Beis HaMikdash, at the very least, we would have that clarity. And at the most, we wouldn't have the challenge to begin with. I remember when I was in school in Beis Yaakov, Rabbi Schwab substituted for us once. And he told us about the times of Mashiach a little bit. And he said, he compared it to, maybe some of you remember Secret Admirer Week. Do you remember that? Where somebody was given your name and she would send you notes, chocolates, little gifts, little tchotchkes, and just tell you how much she loves you and how much she admires you, etc. Love your secret admirer. And you go through your day just feeling more loved, and you have a little more spring in your step, a little bit more confidence. And that's what the Yimas HaMashiach, and that's what the experience of being in the times of the Beis HaMikdash was like. A lot of people struggle feeling a connection to Hashem. A lot of people struggle with feeling like they matter, like they count. And when the Beis HaMikdash was around, and God willing, will be around soon, a person felt connected to Hashem. They would come to Eretz Yisrael, they would come to Yerushalayim, they would come to the Beis HaMikdash, and they would get that sense of how much Hashem loves them and how much they matter. In fact, I remember hearing that by the Aliyah L'Regel, you would imagine that the more people there are in Yerushalayim, the less the individual counts, but it was the opposite. Each person who came to be Ola L'Regel was another jewel in Hashem's crown. Wow, look at this person. Wow, look at that person. Person got that confidence and that sense of love. And they had no doubts that they mattered. They had no doubts that Hashem loved them. In fact, that Yerushalayim is called Yifeinoth Mesos Kal Haaretz, that Yerushalayim is called a place that is the happiest place on earth. So move aside Disneyland. Yerushalayim is the happiest place on earth. Why? What made it so happy? Because of these feelings that we had when we went there, a feeling like we mattered. Also, when a person sometimes makes a mistake, and you know, especially as women, we have a lot of guilt about, okay, I shouldn't have treated that child that way. I shouldn't have said that to my husband. I shouldn't have done this. I shouldn't have done that. And you feel very guilty. A person would go to the Beis HaMikdash. He would bring a karban. He would talk with a kohen. He would do tshuva. And he felt a weight lifted off of him. Yifeinof Mesos Kal Haaretz, to the point where I saw that there was something outside of Yerushalayim called the Kippa Shel Chashbonos, which is translated like a rock, I guess shaped like a kippa maybe, a rock where a person would, so to speak, balance their checkbook and organize their finances. And you had to do that outside of Yerushalayim. Why? Because Chalila, that you would come with a not such a good conclusion. And you shouldn't be sad when you go into Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim has to be a happy place. We also have to realize that Galus is an unnatural state. We get so caught up. We're so busy just keeping up. And especially, I know just being here in America, the culture definitely sweeps us up about what's important. We need to make more money. We have to have better clothes, go on better vacations. And that also definitely seeps into the from world. And we have to realize that that's not a natural state for us. This culture is very focused on Olam Hazeh, but our natural state is to be very, very focused on Olam Haba. We say in the Shir HaMalos before benching, "Vishuv Hashem Ashivas Tzion Hayinu Kecholmin," that when Hashem returns the captives of Tzion, we will be like dreamers. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't feel like a captive. I mean, Baruch Hashem, like we said before, it's a benign galus. I'm Baruch Hashem, I'm free to move and go and come as I please. So are we captives now? Like maybe in the time of the Holocaust, maybe in the time of the Spanish Inquisition, but not now. But that's not true. You know what we're captives of, ladies? We're captives of ourselves. What does that mean? What it means is that in galus, we are held back from being our very, very best selves. Rabbi Waxman from Muncie says over that when the Beis HaMikdash was around, there was such a shefa ruchani. There was so much of a flow of bracha, of spirituality. And once the Beis HaMikdash was taken away, that shefa went into gashmias. Because if you think about it, Yiridas Hadoros makes absolutely no sense. Because how could it be that we're getting weaker spiritually? It doesn't make sense because physically records are being broken every day. Technological advancements are made every day, medical advancements, etc. Doesn't make sense that in Torah and in mitzvahs and in our connection to Hashem, we should be getting weaker. It doesn't make any sense. And the answer is, it doesn't make sense. It's a result of the Beis HaMikdash not being here. And in fact, the mashal is of a mother whose child, a nursing mother whose child is sick. And so what she feels that she has to do to keep her milk supply is she has to nurse another child, even an animal if she needs to, just to keep that milk supply going. So what happens is that Hashem, to keep the tzinor, the pipe open, he pushes that bracha into the physical world. And God willing, it will shift back when the Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt. So what that means on a practical level is that you have to realize that you really are better than what you think. What I mean is that there's a certain ceiling that's put on our ability to see our growth in galus. There's like a glass ceiling that we can't really go through. It's like kind of like a jack in the box, you know, where there's all that pressure and you have to wait till the top opens up and then it can spring forward. And therefore it behooves us to not stop growing and to not stop working on ourselves. Because once Mashiach comes and that box is opened, I've been told some of us are going to be Nevi'im. Some of us are going to have Ruach HaKodesh, many of us. And you're going to be able to see the results of all of that hard work you put into Shmiras HaLashon, having patience with your children, davening, benching, tznius, etc. The way that we got in this mess to begin with was the story of the Meraglim. We know that story occurred on Tisha B'Av. And when you think about the story of the Meraglim, they didn't want to go to the next level. They were happy with, deep down, they were happy with where they were holding, and they didn't want to move on to the next level. Meraglim comes from a lashon of ragil, regular. They didn't want to move on. And we have to break through that as we counter that aveira. We have to be able to move forward and to tell ourselves, I don't want to be ragil. I want to grow higher and higher. And the way that I think about it, I think that each one of us has a heart that pounds with love of Hashem and a desire to get closer to Hashem, but we don't always feel it. It's kind of like an alarm clock that goes off on Shabbos. Did that ever happen to you? So what do? You throw blankets on it, you throw a pillow on it, you're trying not to turn it off because you don't want to do any malacha, but you're trying to silence that sound. And I think that that's what happens with each one of us, that we have that desire to be great, to be special, but it gets quieted through different layers. And perhaps the restrictions of Tisha B'Av take all of the distractions away so that maybe we can key in a little bit more to who we are and who we want to be. Going back to that parak that we say before benching of Shir HaMa'alos, we say, like we said before, B'shuv Hashem Hashivas Tzion Hayinu Kecholmim, we will be like dreamers. So what does that mean? So first let me explain the pshat, and then I want to tie it into what we were just talking about. Hayinu Kecholmim, first let me share with you pshat. Number one, it's that the Geula is going to be like the most amazing dream. An incredible, better than whatever you think it will be like. I always think that once he comes, I'm going to think to myself, how did I not daven with more kavana for this sooner? It's going to be amazing. We know that when Avram Avinu was told that his children were going to go to Galus, he was told that also not only will they go down to Galus for 400 years, but ve'esagai asher ya'avodu don anochi. Hashem said, but Abraham, I'm going to judge that nation. Two words, don anochi. Look what happened from those two words. The incredible midrashim that you read about the Esar Makos, Kriyas Yamsuf, etc. The whole Mitzrayim was like turned on its head. Incredible miracles. Ladies, how many psukim are written about Yemos HaMashiach? There's a lot more than two words. It's mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling. Number two, the way to understand that pasuk is that the Geula is going to be so amazing, like we said before, that it's going to make all of our troubles seem like a bad dream. It's going to be so real and so good that it will make everything else fade to the back. But may I suggest that maybe when we say this pasuk and to connect it, maybe this Shabbos especially, I'm speaking to alumni. Perhaps when you were a teenager, you had dreams. Hayinu kecholmim. We were like dreamers. Maybe in high school, I had dreams. I wanted to be a big tzaddikas. I wanted to build a Torah home. I wanted to connect to Hashem through tefillah, or I wanted to be a big balas chesed in my community. And then sometimes, like that alarm clock mashal, it kind of gets covered up. And I am suggesting that we tap into those dreams. We might have to reassess them, and we might have to translate them according to today's real life circumstances. But don't give up on your dreams. Continue and go forward. And we need to believe in ourselves as we go ahead and dream. And this is what is going to help us to get to the to the Geula. If you think about it, well, the way we started the 3 weeks was Shivasar Batamas. What happened on Shivasar Batamas? We know that the very first Shivasar Batamas that we know of, the Moshe Rabbeinu came down from Har Sinai with the Luchos, and there's Klal Yisrael worshiping an Egel. What made them do the Egel? And psychologically, if you look into what was going on in Klal Yisrael at the time, they were depressed. They were down. Oh my gosh, Moshe Rabbeinu left us. What are we going to do? It's terrible. It's bad. We can't connect to Hashem by ourselves. We need an intermediary. And then 3 weeks later, I mean, not at that time in the story of the Jews in the Midbar, but on the calendar, 3 weeks later, we have Tisha B'Av and the Chet of the Meraglim. How did they come to this? So one of the explanations is that it's not that they didn't believe Hashem could take care of those 31 kings in Canaan. They didn't believe that they were zocha, that Hashem would help them. Again, like a despondency, a lack of belief in themselves. And I think that part of the tikkun that we can do is that we can start believing in ourselves a little bit more with optimism and with dreams again. So let's go on to some of the other questions. Don't we have Eretz Yisrael? A lot of us, some women might be listening from Eretz Yisrael. And it's a beautiful place. And to compound that question, look at what we say at Mincha on Tisha B'Av. Nachem Hashem Elokeinu as Avelei Tzion. Hashem, please comfort the mourners of Tzion, v'es Avelei Yerushalayim, v'es Ha'er Ha'Avela, v'Hachareva, v'Habizuya, v'Hashomema. Hashem, you should comfort Yerushalayim and the mourners of Yerushalayim and the city that is mourning and it's destroyed and it's despised and it's desolate. Ha'Avela mi'bli v'neha, Hachareva mima'onoseha, etc. Ladies, that's very hard to believe, because it's hard to say that, because if you've been to Yerushalayim, Baruch Hashem, it's teeming with beautiful, beautiful things. You go on a Shabbos afternoon, there's so many people walking the streets of Yerushalayim. How could we say that? Don't we have Eretz Yisrael? And it would be comparable, Chalila, to a couple that was tragically killed in an accident. And they left over five children. Five Yisomim. So the children are put up in foster homes, in different foster homes. And one day they decide they're all going to go together to visit that apartment that they used to live in. When they enter it, can you say that that's really their home? Without parents there, it might be the four walls, but it's not a home. Today's Eretz Yisrael is similar. It's definitely an incredible place. People who know me know how much I love Eretz Yisrael. But it's not necessary. It's definitely not what it could be, because our father is not there. It's comparable to someone who has a transplanted organ that he's worried, like it could go out at any time. We say Yiru Einenu V'Yismach Libenu, etc. Bishuascha Be'emes. We ask Hashem that we should see his, not just his Yeshua, but the true Yeshua, which would be with Hashem's coming back to the Beis Hamikdash. What about the question of how can our generation bring Mashiach if previous generations weren't able to do it? So for that, I have two answers. Number one, I know that Avram Fried, I can't remember the whole song, but I know that Avram Fried had a song about how we're living or we are on giant's shoulders. We don't have to recreate the wheel. We are building on what the previous generations did, the Mesiras Nefesh of the generation of the Holocaust. The tzidkos of the Chafetz Chaim, of the Vilna Gaon, of Reb Chaim Volozhin, of the Arizal, I mean, of Rashi, of Ramban, etc., etc. It's kind of like when you want to buy a soda, or I don't know how many of you are buying sodas, let's say your children are buying sodas, and they cost, I don't know how much, let's say $1.50 in the Coke machine. So you need five, you need six quarters, but you only have five. You're not going to get that soda. You need that sixth quarter. And that's what Hashem is not expecting us to be something that we're not. He wants us to do what we can do. And so what is expected of us is just to put in that last coin. Another answer to that question is from Rabbi Pinkas, Rav Shimshon Pinkas. And he would say that after 120 years, he was going to get up to the Yeshiva Shalmala and he was going to see Rav Akiva Eger there. And he says that he, in his humility, although he probably truly believed it's about himself, he says, me, compared to Rabbi Akiva Eger, says, I won't even come up to his toenail. and he's going to peer down at me and say, Shimshon, have you ever learned the Gemara? And he says, and I'm going to look back up at him and say, with all due respect, Rabbi Akiva Eger, when your wife asked you to go to the store to buy some eggs and milk, were there any circulars in the aisles? What do people look like on the street? Have you ever heard of the internet? In other words, what he's trying to say is that even though, yes, we might not be on the level of previous generations, however, the struggles that we have to do now, Hashem entrusted to our generation because our generation can handle it. And we can, and when we do overcome these nisyonos, it weighs very, very heavily in Shamayim. What about tzaddikim who have already passed on and all the work that they did to bring Mashiach? So it says in the parak that we say before we go to sleep, and people say this at other times, parak tabi aleph, it says, Orech yami masvi ehu ve'arehu bishuasi. I will, Hashem says that I'm going to give the tzaddik a long life and he will see my redemption. He'll see my salvation. So what does that mean? Hashem is saying, I will give him a long life and hopefully he'll see the Geula Hashlema. But if he doesn't for the generation's reasons, etc., our Ehu Bishuasi, he's going to see it. We are told that those kinds of people do come back to experience that. What about the question of the fact that we have so many Averos? You know, it even says, I once heard a story, it's very, a little bit sad. Somebody came up to a Rav and made a comment about all these irreligious Jews and they're delaying Mashiach's arrival. And the Rav said, no. It's not the irreligious Jews because they're Tinoko Shenishbu. They don't know better. And it's definitely not the Tzaddikim because the Tzaddikim would bring Mashiach. So then who is it that's holding Mashiach back? So, but even our circles, so how are we going to do that? We can't be perfect. So the answer to that lies also in a pasuk in Tehillim, where we say in Parakuf Lamed, "V'hu yifdeh es Yisrael mikol avonosav," Hashem will redeem Klal Yisrael from all of its averos. And the Farshim over there say, and perhaps some of you learned this together with me, that before the Mashiach's arrival, Hashem will do things that will encourage us to do teshuvah, and then he will bring Mashiach. So that would be the answer to that. I would like to end with a chazal and a story. Chazal say, Kol hamis abel al Yerushalayim zocha v'ra'a b'simchasa, that anyone who mourns the destruction of Yerushalayim, he will be zocha. The truth is actually it says he is zocha, and sees its salvation. So the way we understand that is, okay, well, I put in the Mesiras Nefesh to keep these halachos, so therefore I will be zochet to see Mashiach. It seems like a reward. But it's actually just a very logical outcome. Let me explain to you with, again, lots of Mishalim tonight. I think Mishalim clarify things for us and help us to understand better. So I'm a big fan of Mishalim. Many of you will remember about a month ago there was a terrible, tragic, and heroic story about Rabbi Reuven Bauman of Norfolk, Virginia. And when we heard the story, I'm sure all of you are familiar, but just in a nutshell, he was a Rebbe who was taking a group of boys out on a field trip, and it was near the ocean. And one of the boys got caught up by a wave, so he went in to help get the struggling boy, and the boy was able to come out, but Rabbi Reuven Bauman was missing for several days. So when we first heard it, I know myself, I was very shaken, and I'm sure anyone else who heard was very, very shaken. A Rebbe and Talmidim, that's something that's very close to our hearts. But yet I was able to go about my day and check in with, you know, Jewish websites to see if they had found him yet, etc. But I knew there was one woman here in Denver who had a connection to Norfolk. So I asked her, are you okay? Do you know this man? And she said, do I know this man? He was one of the Adim at my daughter's wedding. She says, I'm not doing well at all. And obviously the community in Norfolk was torn asunder. And the family, I don't even need to describe. So you see from that the more connected you are to someone when they're gone and when we don't know what happened to this individual and they're lost, the more it impacts you. And then if we can, now unfortunately we know what the outcome was of that story, but I think about when Mashiach comes and Rav Reuven Bauman is going to come back. I'm sure I'm gonna, if I see him, I'll be so happy for him to be back, to be in the world again. This woman in Denver, she's gonna be overjoyed. The community of Norfolk, there's no words. And his family, their lives are made. So it's a logical outcome that the more that Yerushalayim means something to you, the more that the fact that we don't have the Beis HaMikdash means something to you, the more it's going to mean to you when it does come back. There's a story about Rav Shach in the early days of Eish HaTorah, that he was invited to a bris that was being held at Eish HaTorah. And I don't know if it was one of his first times being there, but he was very mispalled by the scene. And he points to a man learning in the corner and he says, "Is that about tshuva?" He turns to the person next to him and the person says, "Yeah, he's the person who did tshuva." And then he sees people learning and he said, and over there, and the person davening over there, he's like, "Those are Bali tshuva, those are Bali tshuva." He says, "Yeah." And Rav Shach was totally taken aback and he says, "You know, the power of good is always more powerful than the power of evil. Just a little while ago, there was one man and he was able to eradicate 6 million Jews. I now see that there is one man, Rav Noach Weinberg, who was able to bring back 6 million Jews. It's unbelievable the power of one man." So I heard this story from a dear friend of mine in New York, and she, with a twinkle in her eye, she said, "And can you imagine what one woman can do?" So ladies, b'schus nashim tzidkanias nig'alu avoseinu, u'b'schus nashim tzidkanias asidim li'ga'el. It's up to us. We just have to chip away a little bit more, and Amir Tashem, we will see the Ge'ula HaShlema. It was a treat to be with you. I invite you to use this as an opportunity to reconnect to each other, to the school, to your teachers. We would love to hear how you're doing and to reignite those relationships. Thank you. And I hope that we will see each other tomorrow in Eretz Yisrael. Good night.